I think that we really need to actually embrace it, experiment a ton at the beginning and really learn. Because if any of us think we can look into the crystal ball and believe we actually know where this is going to land, I don't think we're being really honest with ourselves. Some things we think are going to happen and other things, honestly, we're going to be massively surprised by, or they're going to be so disruptive that they will fundamentally change the industry that we're operating in.
Hello, and welcome back to Where AI Works, conversations at the intersection of AI and industry, brought to you by Wharton in collaboration with Accenture. I'm your host, Matthew Bidwell. I'm a professor of management, faculty co-director of the Wharton People Analytics Initiative, and faculty director of Wharton's CHRO program. It's our goal on this podcast to cut through some of the noise around AI and deliver actionable insights for business leaders, combining cutting-edge research with real-world case studies. We know things are changing fast, so let's get started. When we think about AI, we're thinking often about technological transformations. The challenge isn't just adopting new tools. It's really rethinking how work gets done and what kind of skills people actually need today. And so on this episode, I want to dive into some of those questions. I'm going to talk about how AI is reshaping roles, decision-makings, and collaboration across teams at one of the largest online work marketplaces on the planet, an organization which connects millions of buyers and sellers around the world. It's eBay. So joining me for this conversation, it's my pleasure to introduce Paul Stathakopoulos, eBay's Vice President for Product for Focus Categories and International Cross-Border Trade. Paul, welcome to Where AI Works.
Thank you, Matthew. I'm looking forward to a good conversation.
We're really excited you're here. So I wonder if, to get things started, I could just ask you to tell the audience a little bit about what your role entails, and maybe just at a very high level, how you're thinking about AI in your organization.
Yeah, so in eBay, there are large enthusiast categories. So think of things like collectibles, fashion, automotive vehicles or parts and accessories that have very large audiences. And while we sell a lot of things on eBay, we manage these categories end to end. So think about the entire business, the buyer experience, the seller experience that we're managing completely end to end. I run the product and development side of that, and then have a commercial partner that runs the business side. So we're almost like a company within a company running the enthusiast categories that our shoppers love to buy in. The way I think about AI, it's really interesting because I think our industry has been through a couple really meaningful transitions, right? The internet, I mean, this is how eBay was born. The internet came in, we disrupted commerce. I spent a good portion of my career in the media space, right? And so the internet came in and disrupted media and linear TV. And I think of this transition a lot the same, that we really need to actually embrace it, experiment a ton at the beginning and really learn. Because if any of us think we can look into the crystal ball and believe we actually know where this is going to land in 5 or 10 years, I don't think we're being really honest with ourselves. Some things we think are going to happen and other things, honestly, we're going to be massively surprised by, or they're going to be so disruptive, right, that they will fundamentally change the industry that we're operating in.
Yeah.
So I would say just embrace.
Yeah, I completely agree. I am old enough, I'm embarrassed to admit, to remember kind of the birth of the internet. And yeah, some of the biggest companies today that we take for granted as kind of being dominant in our world didn't even exist beforehand. So yeah, it's definitely interesting just to think about not only how our organizations will change, but kind of the entire new business models being born.
Yeah, 100%.
We'd love to hear about how you're using AI at eBay. Maybe you can start by just talking us through how, you know, you talked about embrace, experiment, learn, and all those sorts of things. What did that process look like for you?
I almost put it in like three big meta categories of how we use AI, right? So we use AI to make our products better, right? So there's customer-facing experiences on the buyer and seller side that are now largely driven actually by AI. We use AI in what I'd call like high level, like the back office, right? So AI to make sense of 30 years of eBay data at scale. A lot of it structured, a lot of it unstructured, and it allows us to find insights that we'd never actually get access to without the use of it. And then more emerging is how we use AI to actually deliver what we're doing today and fundamentally change the roles of all the people in kind of the value chain of development that deliver our products. And that one to me actually is really interesting because I think it always begs the question of transformation starting with us trying to automate things that we do as part of our normal job. But where it gets really interesting is where you start flipping the model on its head and starting to envision how you can change roles in an organization. So for example, we've got an orchestration platform internally that's connected to lots of public models, all of our development tools, our entire development tool chain, and a traditional kind of product development lifecycle, right? Always starts with business requirements and then product requirements. Then you go and you build a design, maybe you iterate a bit, and then you do your development, hopefully in an agile way, and then ultimately you deliver something live to site. And we're starting to move into this model where we actually don't necessarily start always with the business requirements and product requirements as this big document. We're starting with like very high fidelity prototypes that are vibe coded in real time with super fast iteration with our customers. Like we may vibe code something in a day or two, go put it in front of customers the next day, collect feedback, and then put it back into the team, iterate again, put it back in front of customers. And in a week or two, you can do something that takes you to like a V3, V4 of a product the first time and really uncover things that delight our customers in a way that you wouldn't have normally gotten to in the past. Because development teams kind of live in their own echo chambers, right? And this allows you to come out of the echo chamber. And what's fascinating is the product requirements document, the PRD that was like the hallmark of every product organization for decades, almost becomes like a derivative document. It becomes the handshake between the humans and the machines to make sure that we really both understand what we're both doing. So it's super great.
I mean, I agree. I think this kind of capacity of some of the tools we have now to enable non-technical people to create rapid prototypes and not just try and describe what they want, but show it is powerful. I know I've talked to some software developers who get a little nervous about this because of kind of the gap between this is a prototype that you can run on your PC, what it takes for a company like eBay, right, to get this on the servers and be able to deliver it reliably and securely to millions of customers looks quite different. Do you find some of those conversations of kind of the product manager going, look, I've done this, you can do that, and them going, nah, there's something more complicated, this is going to take us a while, or has that been fairly smooth?
It's almost like you've lived in my world for the last few months. I think those conversations are happening for sure. What we found is a couple things. One, especially in a marketplace at scale like ours, we deliver experiences that 134 million active buyers use every single day. And so doing that at scale requires a lot of compliance, a lot of governance. Like you really have to like put the right things live to site, or you can have huge problems in the marketplace for our customers and for the business. And so I think at some level, you have to separate the prototype from production, and the prototype becomes like an input into what you're actually going to go build for production. We're starting to experiment. It's really interesting with how you can take the output of the prototype, a navigable visual experience, and code, which code is just a language that describes how the experience works, which can be actually consumed by an LLM or an AI model and used as one of the inputs for it to actually go build the thing that is production ready in the environment at scale that eBay needs to go live at scale and do it in a like safe, observable, and compliant way. Does that make sense?
It does. I mean, as we talk about these issues, I know kind of when I talk to companies, one of the issues that often comes up is kind of the reliability. And yeah, I think the current coding tools are amazing, but once you get much beyond them, you still find with a lot of LLMs, there are quirks. They go off and do things that you didn't ask them to do. They make stuff up and so on. I'm curious how you're thinking about that as you implement AI, where you feel it's, we can just let the agents take this and run with it, and where you feel kind of the human in the loop is still very much needed.
Yeah, I don't think we're at the set it and forget it point. And I don't know that we ever fully get there, especially for things that are high value like this, where you have high levels of security, high levels of compliance. And so the marriage of kind of humans and machines to do this in a collaborative way, I think is what actually gets us there. And this is where I think it's interesting that the roles change, right? Yep. And you may have agents that are off doing work, but you need to have humans in the loop that are ensuring that the agents are doing the right thing, that are ensuring that we're actually applying the right compliance and governance on top of what's going live to site, and then is actually confirming that we're actually doing the right things in our case in the business so that we're not creating damage to the business or doing something that creates damage to the customer experience.
Yeah. I mean, I think my sense is those can be hard jobs in that I think the risk of when 98% of the time is giving you perfect output and 2% of the time you're like, oh my God, don't do that. Like you start to switch off. And so how I think as humans, we remain alert and really checking carefully is going to be something that we're going to need to build some new ways of working to make sure we continue to have that alertness, I think.
And I think we definitely don't believe that one model rules them all.
Yep.
So we integrate with virtually every major public model out there. We have our own internal models that are running on our own supercluster. And the combination of all of that is actually what does the job. Having models double-checking each other, having agentic orchestration and workflow models that are double-checking themselves. So you have a like virtual compliance officer that is actually looking at everything that's going live and making sure that it's checking the right boxes, and then a human being double-checking on top of that.
Yep.
I think starts to get us in the right direction. You are 100% right, though. Like complacency can slide in from the edges really easily, and we need to remain diligent as we take this technology into production.
I know, and I'm very much speaking for myself. Like when AI outputs something, I read the first paragraph and maybe the last paragraph. I'm like, yeah. But I like that idea of kind of layers upon layers to kind of filter and keep checking. That makes a lot of sense.
I'll share a just fun little story. A while back, I built an agent. In large corporations, you do a lot of documents and slide presentations. And so I built a agentic workflow that I can feed any document into. I can give it the names of executives and coworkers inside the company, and it builds personas around those people using public and external and internal data on them. And then it reviews the document and gives me feedback as if it's coming from those people. It was just a fun experiment. I put a bunch of double checks in it. So I had the agent actually document for me how it made the decisions for every single piece of feedback. I wanted it to cite the actual sources of where it got that piece of information from the person's persona that was built up. And it was fascinating because it was great. The feedback was amazing. Like I shared it with some people inside the company. They were using it. And then I started really looking closer at the rationale that it was using. And I found it was actually making up sources, like completely hallucinating. It was actually a gentleman that works for me that I had put his name in just as an interesting test. And it claimed that he had spoken at a TED conference and like all these things that never happened.
Yeah.
Right. And so you really do have to build the checks and balances all the way down to the lowest level so that we control for this.
The models are trained to be plausible, right? Which is great if you're trying to train a sociopathic con man. And so it is, I think, getting that kind of, you know, making sure they're working for us is challenging.
They are a little bit of the best BS artist in the world.
Exactly. You need to keep them on a short leash. You talked a little bit about this roles change. And I think at least the academics, and I think it's crept into everyday parlance now when they talk about jobs changing, they talk about this automation and augmentation idea that part of what new technologies do is they just replace people in certain tasks. But they also make us able to do things that we couldn't do before and create whole new roles and jobs. Just curious if there are any examples of kind of new roles that AI is now creating for you. eBay, jobs that you didn't see before, but now we have.
So I think at the stage we're in at this point, we're very early. I will say, I don't know, outside of more importance on like data science and roles like that, I think we're in the early stages of what I'd call compression, where we're starting to see roles combine and overlap more. So you look at it, if you think of like the three legs of a stool for how you start software development, it's always the designer, the product manager, and maybe your engineering leader or architect that are working on something. Those roles are starting to come much closer together. And in particular, we're seeing design and product management come closer together. And so you can start to see designers that are leaning into the product management side of the world and helping you to build better products. And we're seeing product managers actually going further upstream. I think it's really healthy, actually, because it's for us, it's actually breaking down some of the silos in the organization. We've all talked about like return to office and hybrid work and things like that. And some of the magic for us that's really amazing is when you have three people like this and they sit around a table together and are working in real time and overlapping on each other's jobs in real time and producing actual product out of that, it's like magic. And the team actually comes out of it happier than I've ever seen probably in my career of people working together, because it feels truly collaborative in the efforts that they're doing together.
That's interesting. I mean, the sociologists tend to worry a lot that when you see that overlap, what you get is a lot of conflict. So there's a lot of kind of boundary demarcation and no, that's my work. How do you avoid kind of people also starting to feel a little threatened that their expertise is being challenged as people take on more of their work?
I'll say in my team in particular, we spend a lot of time talking about trust. I think you find inherently in organizations, there's always a tension between engineering, commercial, and product in particular. And so like for me, my philosophy is that when you break those barriers down and have a high trust quotient in the organization, magic can actually really happen, because ideas honestly can come from anywhere. So we spend a lot of time really focusing on the trust side of it. And then on the other end of it, I think people are incentivized by the goals and outcomes that they're aligned to drive towards. And so really making sure that everyone shares the goals or shares philosophically in what the outcome is that they're trying to drive starts to break those barriers down.
It's interesting to hear that. I mean, one of the big debates I think that's been going on over the last year is whether we're really actually creating value with these tools. So you see, you know, one report will come out and say, everybody's investing in AI, but nobody's actually realizing any gains. And then other reports will come out and say, no, that's nonsense. You know, it's making us so much more productive. How do you make sense of that kind of debate? Do you think we've moved into the kind of this is useful stage? And if so, what have been the key things that have enabled us to kind of move past that kind of, it seems cool, but we're not sure exactly how to make it useful?
So I think we're in the early stages of it. If we were around during the beginning of the internet, we're in like the, I don't know, AOL days. 20 years from now, we're not going to recognize what's happening today. I'll give maybe two examples. One is, and we just started rolling this out, it shows up in the experience for all new customers that come on site that are trying to sell on eBay. And we've integrated AI into the selling experience in a way that is truly native. So instead of actually taking the old selling experience that we built up for 30 years and adding AI to it, we actually threw the whole thing away to some extent and started with AI. And so now when you actually want to sell something, if you're a new buyer coming on the site, you click the sell button and it opens your camera and you just start taking pictures, and the models that are connected to it, depending on the item it identifies, creates a unique agent to take you through the process of listing that type of item. And the reason for this is that if you're selling, let's say, a dress versus a car, the type of listing you're going to actually have to create is vastly different. With a car, you're going to take maybe 40 photos, interior, exterior, front, maybe a video. Whereas as a dress, you're going to have a whole different experience and you're going to need to incorporate size and things like that. And so it customizes the entire listing process in a conversational way through photographs before it actually creates the framework of the listing that then you confirm and list. I can't share the early results, but they are hands down have to be in the top maybe one or two most impactful tests that we've run probably in the company's history. So just the unlock of it is phenomenal.
Yep.
The second is we actually just in my team just finished a sprint with three projects that were 0 to 1 projects that were technically below like the cut line, like they were out of plan because of resources are finite always. And so you make plans based on resources. And we basically said, we're going to take these three things and we're going to run them through our AI orchestration platform from concept all the way to production with kind of human hands guiding around the edges, but the agentic models are actually driving everything in the middle, all the way from the design tool Figma to pushing into production at the bottom end.
Yep.
We did all three of these in 2 weeks. We had a 70 to 80% efficiency in just raw calendar time to bring these things live to site. And they're all sitting in production as of maybe 4 days ago. And so as a like very early example of just now starting to see this come to life, it was incredibly powerful. What was really great about it was that we actually learned a lot in the process. We learned how the product managers and designers were going to work in the system. We learned where some of the gaps were in the AI orchestration layers that we had built. And so the next time we do this, we're going to be faster. Also, the things that we built, because the system now understands them, if we want to extend the capability that we built, right? So one of these was a brand new page for a category on the site. And if we want to now take that same model and say, hey, I've got a subset of fashion that I want to go build a similar type of page for, it goes from 9 to 10 days, which is what it took us to bring this live to site, to maybe 36 to 48 hours to bring it live to site because the model understands it.
Most people listening to this, I think, are not as far down the curve as you are. And obviously, as you say, we're all still at the top of the curve. But knowing what you do now, what would you have done differently over the last 6 months or a year? Any big kind of lessons coming out of this process?
It's going to sound strange. I would have started sooner in how we bring it into people's roles in the company. And what I mean by this is that there's a tendency to say, hey, here's access to a bunch of tools, and organically let folks try to learn how to use that tool in the process of their job, which I think is good, right? You see who adopts, who doesn't adopt. You're going to go slower, but there's an inherent power in saying, we're going to start with AI and actually start what we're doing with AI so that we can learn how it might help us in the early parts of a role or a capability or something that we're trying to work on, so that we can build the muscle, and the muscle doesn't become a secondary thought, it becomes primary. And so in the company, I think the way that this has manifested is that there's a tendency when you don't start with AI to always assume that you can do it the old way faster, and you'll be like, oh, it's going to be slower, I have to do it this way because I'm not used to it, so I'm just going to quickly do it the way I normally do it, and then I'll come back and I'll redo it with AI. And so the stuff that we're doing now, where we're actually encouraging the team to start AI first, is where we're, I think, really starting to see some of the really amazing gains. There's a team inside of the company that has moved to 80% of their product reviews being prototype first, which means that we're vibe coding prototypes, testing them with customers, and then that is the first thing that the executive in that area sees to help understand what the product is. And the first few of those went slow. Now the team's built muscle and they're going really quickly with it. And we're ending up with more high fidelity products on the backside.
So it's the version of, we've been telling people for the last couple of years, you need to experiment with these tools, you need to try them. But it's gone from doing that at an individual level then to doing that at the organizational level. So telling teams and businesses and so on, you need to build the AI version of this. It might not be any good, but you need to figure out what's working and what isn't in order to get us there.
Yeah, and maybe putting a little friction in the way to encourage that. Like on a personal side, on my iPhone, I've swapped out Safari for ChatGPT on the main bar at the bottom of my screen. To encourage me, that is the first place that I go so that I'm starting to learn the muscle memory.
Nice idea. That kind of takes me to, I guess, the last area that I kind of want to talk about, which is with the organization level, it's a cultural shift. It's a shift in skills, what people need to think about, be doing. And it's a shift that has tremendous opportunity, but also threat for some people. What are you learning about how to manage the culture, manage the process, help people build those skills toward what you think is the workforce you're going to need in the future?
I think upskilling is really important. We spend a lot of time inside of eBay, folks on the tools, helping them to learn how to use AI in their jobs, giving them tools that we build internally. Every single person on my team has access to basically any model that they want to use and almost any tool that they want to use in some way, shape, or form. There's only certain tools that you can use in the actual process with eBay data, right? There is governance on it, but we effectively have free rein to try and learn from anything. And that is honestly a mandate from our CEO, Jamie Iannone, all the way down through the organization. That's the way that we should operate. 100% have to have the tools available to everyone. That said, I think there's also, as we think about hiring for the future, we do have a very strong focus on hiring interns and recent college grads and people early in their careers that have grown up in an AI environment, so that we're bringing in this like AI first DNA in from the very beginning with some of the newer members of the team that are joining. And then hopefully the combination of both of those, right? The upskilled team members along with AI first starts to really shift and change the DNA of the organization overall.
It's an interesting combination. I mean, I know the worry that we see more broadly is that a lot of companies have just decided they don't need the entry level, the interns and so on anymore. Like, why do I need an intern when I've got an agent? But you feel you need to bring them in to have that expertise with just thinking differently about these processes.
Yeah, I mean, I'll tell you actually on the product side of the house, we actually just opened a extended intern hiring program to bring some more interns in.
Oh, for wonderful next news.
Yeah, we're actually, it's that important for the company to bring young, new talent in that has the skills and has grown up with eBay as part of like their way of working and way of thinking, that we really want to infuse that DNA into the organization.
Great. So any college students listening should have hope and probably go out and find the application form. It sounds like a great place to
Absolutely.
Work.
Absolutely.
I think that's about all we have time for, but I just want to spend a moment to really thank you for what's been a fascinating conversation. I really appreciate all your insights. Thank you, Paul.
And Matthew, thank you for the opportunity. I really appreciated the conversation.
So I don't know what you took away from our conversation, but here are a few thoughts that are going through my mind. We're seeing very clearly the way that AI is enabling organizations to create substantial new value in certain areas. I think, for example, these ideas of reducing time to market, of being able to put together new products way faster than we ever could, is becoming a reality. I think beyond that, it's this idea that it's not just slotting in for people. It's changing the entire way that we do things. And so the story, which I'm hearing again and again, of this kind of rapid prototyping, that we no longer create specification decks and those sorts of things. Instead, we just create a prototype product and use that as the basis for building new things. That's fascinating, I think, not just because it tells us about what we can do, but because it tells us we need to completely rethink how we go about certain processes. We need to rethink what work looks like and what kind of team projects and so on look like in different areas. I love this idea of going AI first, of building the muscle, that just like I think a lot of us have had to force ourselves to use AI to figure out what it can do and what it can't do, even when initially it's not doing that good a job, that within organizations, there is a learning curve, that you need to invest in getting the whole team to do things by AI. So we can figure out where the true opportunities are. And then the final piece, just a reminder yet again, this technology is far from fully baked. It still comes up with the wrong things from time to time. There are ways to get around this. So the multiple layers, the having agents check one another is a very nice start. But I think as we move more and more stuff into the AI realm, figuring out how we stay alert, how we make sure we really are overseeing these somewhat unpredictable processes is going to be something that becomes ever more important. That's all for today. Thanks so much for listening. Please follow us so you don't miss an episode, and be sure to tune in next time when I'll be speaking with Richard Ranjan from Expedia Group. This has been Where AI Works, conversations at the intersection of AI and industry, brought to you by Wharton in collaboration with Accenture. I'm Matthew Bidwell. Thank you and goodbye.
If you want to implement AI that is successful and trusted, or just understand what's happening in the AI world today, can you really afford to ignore AI's risks, limitations, and legal concerns? I'm Wharton Professor Kevin Werbach. My podcast, The Road to Accountable AI, addresses the real-world challenges of AI governance, policy, and ethics. Each episode features conversations with the practitioners, policymakers, and technologists shaping trustworthy AI. Find The Road to Accountable AI wherever you get your podcasts or visit accountableai.net.